afternoon, and welcome listeners to this broadcast of Shooting from the Hip. I'm Jeff Pedro, in with Mark Avery, and we're from Sim Trainer, the Dayton area's first indoor range and firearms training center. We're located at 2031 Dryden Road, right across from DP&L. You can visit us on the web at www.sim-trainer.com. You can give us a call at 937-293-3914, or you can stop down the shop and just sit and talk with our staff, find out what it is that you might be interested in, whether it's a gun selection, legislation, concealed carry, whatever the case might be, and we'd be more than glad to help you out in that regard. We've been off the air for several weeks, and now I think we got a pretty decent run ready to begin today. We should be back on the air with very few exceptions, very few interruptions over the next several months. And we want to welcome our callers to call into the show at 457-1290. That's 457-1290. Tell us what's on your mind. I want to kind of throw something out today that many of you probably saw information on the internet that Black Friday of 2012 set another record in the number of background checks that were conducted. 154,873 checks were conducted. That was a 20% increase over Black Friday of 2011, which was the previous year's high, or the previous
year had the previous record.
Mm-hmm. And then Mark just let me know just before the show that Saturday following Black Friday, there were 88,419 checks run, which was the sixth highest of all time. So gun sales are up, and I want to know why. I want you to call in. I have my own suspicions. I have my own theories. And I want you to give us a call at 457-1290 and tell us why you purchased the gun, or you're thinking about purchasing a gun, or even tell us a little bit about your gun purchasing experience, whatever the case might be. I know there was quite a bit of frustration over the fact that the NICS system was down for much of the day on Black Friday, which, if you can believe that, the most likely anticipated largest call volume day of all time, and the system goes down, which created significant inconveniences throughout the industry. I will say that over at the range, it was only due to Mark's due diligence that we were able to eventually get 8 or 10 run late in the evening that were purchased early in the day, and it did create a kind of a log jam. But we were fortunate because we pretty much have loyal followers who are members of the range, who come to the range for training, and they're devoted to us. But just think about the other places, the box stores or other gun shops where somebody just stopped in. They saw a gun. Maybe it was an impulse buy. They wanted to get it. All of a sudden, they were told, well, we're going to have to wait until next week because NICS was unable to get back with us on verification that you're eligible to purchase. Well, that individual could have done one of a number of different things. Just forgot about it, didn't have time to go back to the store, or maybe they went to another store in between the time that they went to the first store on Black Friday, and then they went somewhere else, and they were able to get that check done, and they were able to purchase the firearm that they wanted at that time. So it was a significant inconvenience, and we don't know what the reason was. I think the stated reason was it was just due to the excessively large or high volume of calls. But regardless of what it was a great day for the firearms industry. 154,000 plus firearms checks conducted that particular day. Obviously, more people were moving into the market wanting to purchase firearms. And then obviously Saturday completed a weekend of about 242,000 total checks in the two-day period. So it was a big day.
And I think that's something else that people may or may not understand about the NICS checks, that NICS checks are used for other things as well. These listed by the National Shooting Sports Foundation are those that are pretty much purpose-coded for purchase at point of sale. But there's one other thing, and that is not all states use the NICS system. Some of them, in some states where they run a federal background check for the issuance of a concealed handgun license, the license itself serves as the background check. So there are many guns that could have been sold that wouldn't be counted in these numbers. So you can't take just the raw NICS numbers and say that's how many guns were sold. But in this case, it's probably short of the number that were sold. And that's still, it's another record since NICS has been in place since 98. So that's a lot.
I will just follow up to that earlier discussion by mentioning that just in the last week, I've had four couples, I can think, two couples that came together that Mark and I kind of tag-teamed and did a group lesson on handguns. These are people who, prior to probably the last few months, certainly the last year, I remember talking to the individual when he came into the store, one of the male subjects who came into the store about 2 weeks ago.
Students, Jeff.
Students, yeah. And they said, man, the world's changing. I think I need to get myself a gun. I realize I'm responsible for personal safety. I listen to you on the radio. I see how things are going, but I don't know where I start. And they came in and they started with us, and we've taken them to a very competent level in handling their firearm and shooting their firearm in a very short period of time. And they're excited about it, and they're approaching it the right way. And I think of them, and then I think of two other couples, both in their age range from 60 to 80, who not only came in for pistol instruction over the last several months, but then they just came in for rifle instruction, and they're looking at adding to their weapon collection and firearm collection. And I think that's – I want to hear from our audience, our listening audience. What are the reasons you give, or what have you heard? What's going on out there? And let's create some hearty dialogue and some meaningful discussion on the topic. Mark, you got somebody on the
air? Yeah, we do. Let's go out to the phones, and we'll talk to Jeff, who's calling from Springfield. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing today?
We're doing great. How can we help you?
Oh, well, I just had a quick question.
Sure.
Not that I'm opposed to it at all. Actually, I just bought a Taurus Millennium Pro.
Okay.
And I was considering getting my CCW. But the thing is, you hear all the bad things on the radio, on the news, of all the bad things that come out of it. But quite contrary, what are the you don't hear any things about the good things, all the good things that have happened from it. And I'm just kind of curious about why.
Well, when you say bad things, what is it that you're talking about?
Well, why it's so bad to get them, and I don't know. You hear a lot of news stories downing it.
Well, part of that problem is the obvious bias of most of the media against guns. So that's the one issue. And that plays out whether it's a newspaper print, on the internet, on the radio, on the television, except for WHIO, I will tell you. I mean,
yeah.
They
I listen to 957 quite a bit.
Right, and there are several other syndicated radio stations throughout the country that are pro-gun. But for the most part, there's a bias against guns, so naturally they report things with a negative twist. One thing I will mention, and I think it's rather interesting, and I think it's going to be very interesting in the future to see how it plays out. You remember the George Zimmerman incident in Florida? When was the last time you heard any? When was the last time you heard anything noteworthy about that situation? When it went down, prior to the election, you heard about it on a regular basis. But as we got closer to the election, and now we've not heard much of anything. And I'm going to make a prediction here today, just because I've heard some information about how things are proceeding in that particular case. It's going to turn out not to be that big of a deal in the end run.
Right. In fact, it wouldn't surprise me at all if his charges were completely dropped.
That's what I would fully expect, because they were trumped up to begin with. But in response to your question, there is a lot of negative, but as far as the positive, here's the single most significant positive that I think overrides all the negative, regardless of what measures of truth they carry. And that's that you are responsible for your personal safety. And the firearm,
and my kid, and my wife.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. For you, your child, your family members, and all innocent people that are out minding their own business, abiding by the law and doing righteous things, you choose to take a firearm, to purchase a firearm, to learn how to shoot the firearm, to carry the firearm in defense of yourself and others, and that's a responsible citizen. That's the responsible thing for a citizen to do, and realize the police can't be everywhere 24/7.
I understand that. Yeah.
So I think that overrides most all the negative comments that are out there. And in addition to the fact that it's your Second Amendment right to do so.
Well, I have many other guns. This is my first handgun purchase.
Well,
I'm a firm. I was just curious to see, what other stories were out there,
Well, there's a great list of examples of people who have used firearms to defend themselves. The Buckeye Firearms Association maintains a list of those in Ohio who have concealed handgun licenses and ended up using a firearm in some way to defend themselves or to stop something bad from happening that was putting someone at risk of great bodily harm or death. And that's a fairly long list. There are some other records. If you go to the National Rifle Association Institute for Legislative Action, there is the Armed Citizen Report. They also put issues or examples in each of the NRA magazines each month. So there's a history going back many decades in that database of people who have used firearms for self-defense and as a result are able to live to tell about the story. And I think that's really the big thing. The people who are prepared to deal with a situation that they didn't ask for, that they didn't want, that they didn't instigate themselves, but that was forced upon them, are able to stop the bad things from happening to them. They're not the ones who decided that someone was going to be injured that day, but the person who made that decision then is the one who ends up suffering that consequence, and that's the right way it should end.
Yeah, another thing, just to reaffirm what I mentioned earlier, the same people that are quick to mention terrible things about guns are also quick to smear horrific details surrounding violent criminal acts that bad guys inflict upon innocent people on the front page of the paper or on the highlight pages of the internet or whatever, and they'll go into very graphic detail about the circumstances surrounding that. But when was the last time you saw a rundown of a situation from beginning to end where a law-abiding armed citizen thwarted a violent criminal attack and brought it to successful resolution, whether he killed the perpetrator or held him at bay until the police got there or chased him away until the police could respond and then apprehend him after the fact? You don't see those stories. So the media floods the airways and the newsprint and things with all of the negative things, but the positives very seldom get reported, and that's unfortunate, but that's what we're here for. And that's another thing. I welcome the opportunity for the people who believe the other way to call into this show and present their argument, and let's engage in some meaningful debate, and let's talk about here. They would argue that you're getting one side of the picture here. Well, let's hear their side, and let's debate it back and forth, and let's see who can support their stance one way or the other.
See, that's really the big problem with those who have stories about why concealed carry and armed citizenry is such a bad thing. The biggest problem is that all of the arguments that they make, they have to make stuff up because the facts are not on their side. One of the things that we do here at Shooting from the Hip is to go out to the facts. In this case, for armed citizenry and for crime situations, crime statistics, the place that we go is the Uniform Crime Report that is published by the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And that is the definitive source for that kind of information. And because when you go to the facts don't support the rhetoric, you have to believe the facts. The facts are the truth. And sometimes those numbers may not seem like they're making sense based on what you're feeling, based on what you're hearing reported. But when you look at the statistics and you look at the reports and see that there's a disconnect, the disconnect is on the side of the reports, not so much on the statistics, because those you can count on. Jeff, thanks very much for calling the show. We need to take our first break for the hour, and when we get back, we'll talk with John and George and John again also, and we will take your calls at 457-1290. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290 News Talk Radio WHIO.
God bless America. This is your blood brother, Ted Nugent, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on News Talk Radio WHIO.
Thank you, Uncle Ted. Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip. Let's go right back out to the phones. We'll talk to John, who's calling in from Dayton. John, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. How can we help you?
My Florida out-of-state concealed carry license will be expiring soon, and I have to get fingerprints to send to Florida, and it has to be from a law enforcement agency. So how should I handle that?
Well, the easiest way is if you can go to one of your local departments and find out if they participate in the program called WebCheck. And they can go ahead and submit those prints and get them taken care of. However, in your particular case, you're an Ohio resident and you have your Florida license. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's a Florida out-of-state CCW.
Do you have an Ohio license?
Do you have an Ohio also?
That's correct.
You do have the Ohio.
And I did just get that renewed myself.
Okay,
yeah.
That's fine. Then what you're going to probably need is an actual set of road prints as opposed to being able to use the web check computerized version. So you just have to go to a local police department or sheriff's office and see if they'll do that for you. They're obviously going to charge a fee, but that would be the best way to proceed. Go ahead and contact your local police department or sheriff's office and see if they'll do that for you.
You may have to call around a little bit because a lot of the places now just do only the electronic prints and don't have the capability to do rolled prints anymore. But there's always some place that you can get them done.
Right.
Because we have to get those done for security background checks and that sort of thing as well. So you get those done. They have a special card for those. Did you get one with the Florida application?
Yes, I thought
that's the way it was. Yeah, they have a special card that they use. And then so you get those rolled and then send them in along with your application.
Okay, I will start calling around. I guess I was wondering if companies, organizations that did the Ohio training, concealed carry training course, if I could go to one of them and maybe for a small fee they would do it.
No, nobody that offers the training is going to be certified to provide those prints to the Bureau in Florida.
And they wouldn't be able to do that under the auspices of their training. They would have to do it because they were certified to do that for their job, which would mean law enforcement.
Okay. Well, I when I first got my Florida out-of-state license 5 years ago, I went to a class in Springfield, and they did do the prints and picture for my Florida license. So I guess that... Not many people are doing that Florida thing anymore.
Right. Well, there's a lot of people doing it, but as far as the prints go, I don't know what the circumstances were. That might have been done through the sheriff's department, but if private individuals were doing it, I'm not aware of those kinds of circumstances. There may be some private security companies out there that do background checks where you might be able to get them to do it for you, but the best bet would go to your local police department or sheriff's office, okay?
Thank you for your time,
sir.
Thanks for calling the show. Let's go out and talk to George, who's calling from Springfield. George, welcome to the show.
Hi, I've got a question about registering a shotgun. I inherited a shotgun from a grandfather, and it's been probably been a while since it's been fired, which I was going to have the thing checked out. But do I have to register this in my name now or anything? Or no. I don't think he ever had it registered either. So.
No, in Ohio, there's no requirement for registering firearms.
Okay.
When you purchase a firearm, they're not even registered then. So it's just a matter of you have some sort of trail for ownership purposes. If it has a serial number, if it's not so old that it doesn't have a serial number, I would make a record of that so that should something happen and it gets stolen or there be a problem, that you would then be able to show and prove ownership.
Okay.
But in terms of registration, there's no requirement to do that in Ohio. Some states have put that in place. I consider that to be a violation of the Second Amendment of the Constitution. There's the right to keep and bear arms doesn't mean that that arm is supposed to be registered with anyone, that the government has any control over that. So
I see.
That's my personal opinion. Unfortunately, that's not the way some states see it. Fortunately, Ohio is not one of those states, and I don't plan on going to one of them.
Most of the states that have such laws are being challenged on almost a daily or weekly basis as to how far they can, how the scope of those laws can reach.
George, thanks very much for calling the show. It's not really enough time left in this segment in order to be fair to another caller, so we'll take James after the break. And if you'd like to be on the show, give us a call at 457-1290. Maybe you have a question about something related to firearms, or if you'd maybe you've been one of those folks, one of those many hundreds of thousands of people who were purchasing firearms over the Black Friday weekend and would like to weigh in on what it was that took you to that point. Why is it that you decided to purchase a firearm, particularly if it's your first firearm? But obviously those of us who have purchased firearms in the past and have more than one, and that is a good thing. If one is enough, then, well, if one is necessary, then two is probably necessary as well. And, you know, you want to be able to have one that you can give to a backup to whoever it is that's watching the other side of the door. So thanks very much. If you would like to, again, be part of the show, call us at 457-1290. We're going to take a break now for the news at the bottom of the hour and head over to the News Center with Daryl Bauer. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290. News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome back to the show. This is Jeff Pedro in with Mark Avery, I'm the Houston trainer. We've got several callers on the line, but if you would like to get in our queue, give us a call at 457-1290, and we'll be glad to get you in line and get you up on the air. Let's go out to the lines, Mark.
Let's talk to James, who's calling from Dayton. Welcome to the show.
Yes, I really appreciate the service that this show provides with all the good information.
Well, thank you.
You was talking about pros and cons, and one of the things that I've heard people comment about is that if you sign up for a CCW and all that while you're on a list that would possibly go against you, God forbid, if confiscation ever came into play, and with our present administration and the UN, why, we got people that would just love to do that.
Okay.
What's your feelings about, I guess, there's no way of telling, but how would that, God forbid, if that happened, would there be a list that you would be on that they could come in and confiscate your weapon?
Well, that, you know, at this point, it's all conjecture because, for one thing, it's not likely to happen. It's certainly not likely to happen in Ohio. We have seen confiscations occur in the past, one time that I'm aware of in after Katrina, and that was turned around within 4 days by a federal court in New Orleans after Katrina within 4 days. So just, I mean, when you consider the logistics and the difficulty of even finding someone in a federal court in order to be able to place, you know, to make some sort of a decision, they found them and they were immediately decided that that was completely unconstitutional and they had no right to do that. That was turned around, but then they ignored a lot of other things and many of those guns just either sat in ruin or were never returned to their rightful owner. So we certainly do have the experience that something like that has happened in the past. I think a lot of people took that as a wake-up call. I know I'm certainly in that category. And frankly, if something like that were to happen, I would find a way for that not to occur where I am. In order for them to do that, they would have to convince people who have sworn an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And they would have to convince those people who have sworn that oath that they should ignore it and that they should go ahead and violate the Constitution. And frankly, I think that's going to be difficult to see happen, at least in most of the places where the Constitution still means something to people.
Where is the best fight being to protect that right? Is that the NRA is doing the best job?
I think so. There's a lot of organizations that are working in that same direction, but there's no question that the National Rifle Association is the most effective lobbying organization on Capitol Hill, not just with respect to gun rights, but with respect to anything. If you ask anybody who is the most effective, any of the legislators, who is it that they are most concerned about when they get a letter or they get something that says, you know, we oppose what you're doing or we support what you're doing, who is it that they pay the most attention to? Almost always, it's the NRA that comes back as the number one.
And just one other thing, you kind of mentioned New Orleans. Would this be a state-by-state thing, you think? Or?
Well, it could be, yes. It could be. It certainly could be something that would be requested at the federal level. I don't think that's going to happen. And that's the reason I really don't think it's going to happen at all, because I don't think that it's something that the federal government is willing to throw out the Constitution, because that's what they'd have to do. You'd have to throw out the Second Amendment. And you'd also have to throw out the right to property in the Fifth Amendment, because now you're talking about confiscating something that's privately owned property, and that's a fairly big hurdle for people to overcome.
Excuse me, but is the UN, would they have any preference to force us to do something like that?
Well, that's one of those big questions. There has certainly been some rumors about that, and the UN is basically anti-gun across the board, but on the other hand, anything that would have to come through the UN that would be, even if the current administration agreed with it and would be willing to sign it, it would still have to get ratified by the Senate. And although we don't have a Republican majority in the Senate, we do have and have had a pro-gun majority in the Senate. This is really not a Republican-Democrat partisan issue. This is a liberty and statism or control issue. And frankly, the liberty faction of the Senate is far greater than just Republicans and Democrats. It's
Thank you very much for your time.
Hey, thanks very much for calling the show.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Let's go out and talk to Steve, who's calling from Sydney. Steve, welcome to the show.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I purchased a handgun about a year ago, and of course you have to get the authorization, the criminal background check.
Correct. The National Instant Check.
Does that coincide with what you have to do to get a concealed carry? I mean, isn't it basically the same check?
Well, it's not exactly the same check. The check that the sheriff does goes through the Bureau of Criminal Investigation here in Ohio, and unless you have been an Ohio resident for less than 5 years, in which case then it goes to the FBI. So
okay.
It's not exactly the same check, but if you pass that check, the chances are really good that you won't have a problem with the Ohio background check. And in fact, you would know that anyway, just by looking at the concealed carry book and to show what things would prohibit you from getting a license.
Sure, sure. What about how long do you have to get your concealed carry after you've taken the course?
You have 3 years to file the application for your license.
Okay.
Your certificate is good for the initial application in 3 years, and the certificate itself is good for 6 years, but you must have filed the application within 3 years.
Okay, great. And I like the last gentleman's comments because they were on my mind also.
And I know it's something that is on a lot of people's minds. So thanks very much for calling the show.
Thank you. I appreciate your help.
Hey, thanks. Let's go out and talk to Larry, who's calling from Beaver Creek. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I had a question, and you answered some of my questions in the last call.
Okay.
But I have let my permit to conceal carry.
Is that your Ohio concealed carry handgun license?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and it expired. I had a recent illness and just overlooked it.
Okay.
And it's been expired for quite some time now. What process do I need to go through?
Well, how long is quite some time? I mean, has it been 6 years since you took your class?
Yes, it has.
Okay. Then you may have to take the class over again.
Okay.
And that is, I mean, if it's been more than 6 years since you've renewed or recertified or had that class, then you may need to take the class again. And file another initial application. But if you contact the sheriff's office where your license was issued, mm-hmm. they would be the best one. All of them have a concealed handgun license person who deals with that, and they would be able to let you know specifically based on your situation.
Terrific. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling the show. Let's go out and we have one more call on the line. We'll talk to Bill, who's calling from Centerville. If you'd like to be on the show, you can call the studio at 457-1290 and get in the list as well. Bill, welcome to the show.
Hey, great show. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, just a quick question. When you go to buy a new gun and they call in for your authorization, are they just authorizing you as an individual to buy a gun, or is there any record of the actual gun you are purchasing?
Excellent question.
It's actually both. It's a check to determine whether you as an individual are authorized to purchase a firearm, and then we have to, as a federal firearms licensee, I have to record the transaction, which includes your name, the type of firearm, the date of the sale, and that sort of information on the actual form. However, that is not called in with the actual information that is called in about you. In other words, when I call in to check about you, I'm just sending in biographical data about you mm-hmm. to determine, so they can make a determination if you have any prohibited offenses that are going to prohibit you from purchasing the firearm. I then retain the copy of the 4473, which is the actual form, on premises. This is the basic purpose, and the only time those are really ever looked at is if the firearm is stolen and or there's some other issue where law enforcement gets involved, reference to the particular firearm that you have. For example, it was stolen from you and then used in a crime. They may check it back and trace it back to me to determine that it was actually sold on this particular date to you. But that's the only time that information becomes usable.
And how long do you have to keep those records?
20 years.
20 years, I see. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Now, but the other thing that is important to note is that all the information that is provided to the FBI, all that biographical information, mm-hmm. is only kept for as long as it takes to do the check. And then within, I believe, 24 hours, that information has to be purged from their system. And the only thing that they keep is the fact that the transaction was done, the date on which it was done, and the transaction identification number that tells them who we are that ran the check, the FFL number. So there's no information about you other than the fact that that check was completed and that we were given the authorization to proceed with the transfer. So if something ever were to come up, that's not creating a database of folks. And one of the reasons that we know that's to be true is because if you are delayed at some point or you are denied and then you appeal and that appeal is overturns the denial mm-hmm. and you're allowed to purchase the firearm, every time you then go to purchase another firearm, it's almost guaranteed that you're going to have that same outcome. So that's because they're not allowed to keep that additional research information that they do between the delay and the final outcome. If you are one of those people that has that done, you can tell them it's okay to keep your information through something that's called a voluntary appeal file, and you have to initiate that yourself. But unless you do that, the only information that they have is that we, the federal licensed firearms dealer, mm-hmm. initiated a request on this date, and here is the outcome, and here is the number, the tracking number associated with that. That's all the information that's kept.
I see. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling the show.
Have a great day.
Thanks, you too.
Bye.
Let's try to get one more call in before our last break. We'll talk to Neil, who's calling from Xenia. Welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you. My question is, what is your opinion, or if you have any experience with the, like, a polymer frame SIG versus the traditional steel frame, like the 226 or 229?
Well, we've had experience with both in a variety of manufacturers of firearms, and quite frankly, in all the major manufacturers, they're performing to high standards, and there's not much difference. The one thing I will tell you with the polymer frame, you're just going to have to care for the frame as far as wiping it down with solvents a little bit more diligently than you would with the steel frame. Obviously, the steel frame will hold up to most of the solvents a little bit better, but the polymer over time could start to wear. But we've not seen any problems. There were some problems with some of the polymer frames early on with the rails cracking or that sort of thing, but those issues have been pretty much resolved with the major manufacturers, and there's not much difference in actual performance. And you got to understand that the main reason they did that was to decrease the actual weight and in some case cut down on the size of the firearm, and that was through extensive testing. When you're talking about SIG and Smith & Wesson and HK and Springfield and Ruger, the prominent manufacturers.
Glock.
And Glock. Oh, yeah. We've got to get Glock. They were probably the founders of the polymer frame.
The Tupperware guns.
Yeah, that's right.
Combat Tupperware.
They went through extensive testing, and they had to pass some real serious rigorous testing in order to meet the standard for military law enforcement, so they've performed very, very well.
Right. Yeah, and my question was less about the reliability, because I know that in some cases the polymer is actually more durable, like 10 millimeters, for example. But I was just more concerned about, like, accuracy. You know, if there's one tends to be more accurate than the other.
Well, the polymer frame isn't going to affect the accuracy very much because the slide rests on top of the frame and the barrels are almost always steel. As a matter of fact, I'm pretty certain they're all steel, and all of the mechanisms that actually contribute to the firing of the gun are steel, so it's going to have little to no impact. And then as far as the tolerances of the barrel within the frame, again, those had to be made to such strict standards that there's not much problem. And I can just tell you from 20-plus years of dealing with them, not aware of any significant problems that are noteworthy.
And we're talking again about a handgun. So for the most part, the handgun is going to be more accurate than the hand holding it. And that's where the accuracy really comes in, is that in your ability to shoot it accurately is far more a factor than the accuracy of the gun itself. Neil, thanks very much for calling the show. We need to take our last break for the hour. If you'd like to be on the show, give us a call at 457-1290. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on WHIO.
Hi, this is Cam Edwards from NRANews.com, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome back to the show. Let's go right back out to the phones, and we'll talk to Mike, who's calling from Dayton. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a question. I've never read an explanation of why the government is buying so much ammunition, millions and millions of rounds of ammunition, for agencies that really doesn't sound like they need to be buying ammunition.
Okay, let me explain it, because I've done some research on that. And the answer, I have. It's the what it's usually reported as the Department of Homeland Security that's buying all this ammunition. And the reason they're buying it is because they run the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center. The Federal Law Enforcement Training Center is where all the agencies, all the federal agencies get their firearms training. And that some people say, well, but they're buying hollow point ammo. They don't use that for practice. Well, actually, they do. They use the real duty ammunition for the practice and for the training to make sure that everything works exactly the way it's supposed to make sure that the firearms work the way they're supposed to, and to make sure that everybody knows exactly what's going to happen when they fire the gun with their duty ammunition. So I actually did the research by looking it up on the federal procurement data system and looking at some of those orders. That's exactly who's ordering it, is the FLETC, Federal Law Enforcement Training Center. So although there's a lot of conspiracy theories out there about how terrible it is that the federal government is buying all this ammunition, the bottom line is those are the guys we'd really like to be accurate.
Okay. I just haven't seen the explanation, and they had some of the federal agencies that, that just sounded like they why are they buying millions of rounds of ammunition. So, okay, good. I appreciate the answer, and a great show, guys.
Thanks very much for calling the show. Let's go out and talk to Steve, who's calling from Sydney. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thank you for taking my call. My question is, when I fill out the paperwork at a gun store, what do they do with the paperwork if they go out of business?
Well, what they do is they're required to retain it in their records until they're actually out of business. Then they actually have to send it back to the federal firearms license. I imagine, where is that, Mark? I don't even know where it's
not
at.
Not even sure. It's at
wherever the actual physical facility for archiving that information. If you go out of business, it has to be mailed back. But the records have to be retained for 20 years. And then if you do go out of business, they'll have to be sent back to the wherever that warehouse is for that data.
If that license is transferred to someone, in other words, if the store is bought out and somebody else purchases it, they also then retain the, all the previous records as well. That's transferred to them as the new holder.
Okay. Two of the stores that I've been buying guns from have gone out of business and they didn't transfer the license. So, and they said they had to send it back. And I thought, well, that isn't what I wanted to hear, but I guess that's what they do with it. And then they must keep it for 20 years in archive.
For the total of 20 years from purchase date.
Okay, gotcha. All right, well, that answers my question.
Thanks for calling the show. Let's try to get one more call in. Kirk calling from Vandalia. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, a quick question here. I called last year. I made a nice cherry stock for my .44 Ruger pistol, and I called you guys and was like, oh, no, that's short-barreled rifle, federal offense. Now, can I use like a post of some sort? My nerves aren't all that great, and my aim isn't all that good, so I can put like it on a rest or something.
You could use a shooting stick.
I'm hunting for deer.
You could use a shooting stick, absolutely.
Okay. Well, that was one thing I was thinking about.
Yep. Just so it's not attached to the gun, you're fine.
All right. Well, super. Appreciate it.
Thanks very much for calling the show. We are out of time. Thank you very much for being part of the show. We're glad to have you with us. We'll see you again next week. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290. News Talk Radio, WHIO.